tight, isn't it? Everybody likes it a lot. Our topic for this evening is encounters with God, and we are more than happy to have as our speaker Sister Genty. Her official title is European Director of the Roma Canaris, well known for her depth and clarity of intellect. She travels internationally as a speaker and broadcaster on spiritual matters. First, for over 40 years, Sister Genty has been exploring and deepening her understanding and experience of a relationship with God, and she's going to share some of that understanding and experience with us this evening. We're going to have an interview format, and interviewing Sister Genty is Tricia Barrett, long-time meditator since childhood, really, and journalist by profession. So I'd like to welcome her up onto the stage now. Thank you.
Fascinated by for a number of years, very much since childhood, and I think that we can spend maybe the next hour exploring different aspects of this, and then certainly if we have time we'll try and take some questions at the end, but I'm also quite interested in any potential practices that we could try out maybe during the course of the evening as well, based on your own master experience as well. I guess the title of tonight's talk is Encounters with God, and I guess that always starts from a premise that we're accepting that there is a God, and I was quite interested by the most recent census data that was published earlier this week, where I think in the UK it said that 45% of the population say they are of no religion or do not believe in any particular God.
Percentage again?
45%, so maybe half of this country now do not believe that there is God or assign themselves to a particular religion. Maybe it's out of interest, how many of you here, if you don't mind putting your hand up, believe in God or a God? How many of you aren't sure? 2, 3. Anyone who thinks that there isn't a God? It's a quite pro-God audience. You've got an audience pretty much on your side already, I think. But this is maybe an atypical audience compared to the wider British population, which is maybe not too surprising. But how do you sort of address this issue, which I'm sure gets put to you many times, in terms of how can you even be sure that there is a God, and how can anyone be sure that there is a God?
Well, first of all, Om Shanti, a great deal of peace to you and my brothers and sisters. And yes, it's a very special subject, and I'm delighted with you tackling the subject here. And especially after hearing the statistic, I can see that there's a desperate need for the subject to be explored further. And yes, especially in England, Northern Europe generally, it's a question, is there a God? How do you know? And in my early days, I would think it's possible to prove to somebody that there is God. And over the years, I've discovered that it's actually not possible to prove anything to anyone. I've discovered that I can't prove the existence of soul to anyone. If somebody truly is absolutely committed in their belief that there's nothing but body and brain and that's it, and there's nothing more beyond, can't convince them of anything else. Everything is brain, brain, brain. And if they don't accept soul, then it's very difficult for them to go beyond that and accept the supreme soul. And so things just stop. And so what I found is that if you can share your own experience and guide people, people, at least towards the experience of soul, then hopefully once they start experimenting and experiencing with the soul, then maybe further down the line they'll come to an experience of the Divine, of the Supreme, which is what happened in my case. Grew up in a family where both parents believed in God, but one from a very traditional Hindu perspective and the other from the Raj Yoga perspective. And as a child you don't form an opinion as such, at least I didn't. But by age 14, and the indoctrination of science and the atmosphere of England in a permissive society in the early 60s, it was just coming up, I felt that Hinduism didn't answer my questions, Christianity didn't answer my questions, and I wasn't aware enough to pose questions to Raj Yoga. And so that area wasn't really explored. And so I decided that I'd leave the subject of God till a much later date, when maybe something would happen and I would need to know. But I discovered that by the time I was 18, I was having to make many choices of lifestyle. And that's when I decided that let me at least find out what Raj Yoga is saying. And then when I started to study, the experience of the soul was instant. I heard the lesson on the soul, and it was like a light started to shine in here. And after just 1 hour's lesson, I felt as if I wasn't walking down the road. My feet were above the earth. I wasn't touching the ground. It was a very, very powerful, immediate experience. And so that lasted the whole day. I'd come for a lesson at about 10 o'clock in the morning, and then the whole day there was that feeling of euphoria of just being light. Next day I was ready to listen to the subject of God. And it made a lot of sense, because it was put out in a very, very simple way. And it wasn't mystery or magic that was involved, just a very simple explanation that all the souls are unique and there is one soul who is a supreme. And try experimenting and practicing the connection. And the experiences began to happen very quickly.
Could you maybe say a little bit more about what you mean by experimenting with a connection with God? What does that actually mean?
The first step really has to be coming to the awareness of who I am. And maybe because we want this to be an experiential evening, let's practice a few minutes of self-consciousness. And through that, I'll also maybe bring in the subject of the Divine, so that there's an experience of how to make that connection. We can analyze it after all then. So just letting yourself sit comfortably, with letting mind be alert. I'll speak out my own thoughts and invite you to follow these ideas. As the body relaxes, I turn my thoughts inwards and focus my thoughts in the center of the forehead. And I begin to feel a focus of energy in the center of the forehead. I begin to realize that in fact this energy is the life force. This energy is who I am. I, the inner being, beam of light. And I, the beam of light, am the being in charge of this physical body of mine. But I, the being of light, am quite separate from this physical form. And in this awareness of the eternal I connect with peace within myself. And as my thoughts seem peaceful and my mind becomes quiet, I can feel the presence of the divine. And my thoughts connect with the Supreme, the source of light, of truth, of love. And from the source, the light of the divine reaches the soul. And I realize this is the light of love. Light of truth. And this light uplifts me, heals me, and transforms me. Physical dimension, and the things here and now, that I hold this experience. Step of coming back to the awareness of the inner being really is absolutely fundamental, and most traditions haven't offered any explanation of this inner being at all. And so I think that the door of consciousness opens through this. Otherwise, for me, the question of God was very far away, it was out of reach. I didn't know who God is, where God is, and how to experience God. And if I'm just told in theory that there is someone who is God, but I can't reach God, how am I going to discover myself? And so it was beautiful that I came to that point early on in my life, that
I was able to have this understanding which allowed me to have this experience.
It seems to me that this experience or connection that you have with God is very much drawn from the sort of Eastern tradition compared to, I guess, more the particular Abrahamic traditions, which seems certainly in my mind. I went to a Catholic school, and when I was going to Catholic school, we were brought up or taught of seeing God in a particular type of way. The God of the Bible, for example, critics of Christianity certainly say, you know, people like Professor Richard Dawkins, who, you know, has a problem with God generally, those of you know his book, The God Delusion, talks about the fact that how can people even conceive of a being that is so potentially nasty in terms of what this person does, but also that there's almost a compunction that you have to pray to God and revere God. And yet you don't seem to get a huge amount back in return. Certainly in terms of my instinct is that certainly the experience that a lot of people have in the world today, I imagine the reason why there is a rise in atheism is that people don't think God does anything, because there's no evidence of his existence based on the condition of the world today. So how would you combine what I'm sure is a very legitimate worldview that a lot of people have with this very personal experience that you've just shared with us in terms of connecting with this being?
I want to come back first to the subject of soul consciousness, because I really do see that that's the starting point. And in a world that's very, very materialistic, and we just think that this body and the identity of this is the most important and the only thing that matters, in this ego of the physical self, there is no God, because there's no way I can reach God or that God can reach me. And this is something very dramatic, like a near-death experience, which is actually the separation of consciousness of the soul from the body. But that's Raj Yoga's interpretation of it. With many people now who've either read books on the near-death experience or been through the near-death experience, all report that it's possible for this consciousness to be somewhere up above and the body to be down below. I won't go into the detail of that, because I'm sure many, many of you are aware of that whole subject. And that for me is a very powerful indication of how sometimes circumstances, force, destiny pulls you out of the consciousness of the body. And in that state, there comes an awareness of God's light and a recognition of a being who's divine. But within the normal state, it's just the ego of this, and that's it. I'm concerned about my position, my possessions, and people, and the things down here. And there's nothing further that touches my existence. And yes, you're right. The Abrahamic traditions, I went to Catholic school till 11. And then after that also, of course, Anglican school. And in those days, religious study, which meant the Bible. Religious study didn't mean anything else, but it meant the Bible through until 15 was compulsory. So that's the background also. But the Abrahamic traditions, all of them, have described God in a very macho, paternalistic way. And in fact, there's a book that's out, and it's about why women believe in God. But it's an interesting one, in which that whole awareness of why women have been given a very secondary role in modern society has been explained just in the context of religion and the very macho influence of the Abrahamic traditions. But within that, a God that you fear, or a God that punishes, this is the dominant form of God that comes through. And so why would I want to bother to have a relationship with somebody that I need to be afraid of, and I'm afraid that they're going to be punishing me? not seen any evidence of their existence. I don't know how to connect with them, experience them. And I'm seeing, as you said, a lot of negativity in the world. And no impact of God God's intervention in any of that. And so it's very easy to dismiss the whole concept of God. And then this idea of God as a very personal one, I'm not sure that I describe it as one that's of an Eastern tradition, because the Eastern tradition that's actually now come across to the West and has really overtaken the West, in old-fashioned language, I describe it as the concept of omnipresence. And in modern-day language, it would be described as cosmic consciousness. That's what I'm at least understood from the things I hear. And it's a very interesting explanation I came across a couple of years ago. And this was reading a dialogue between Ken Wilber. Anyone heard of this philosopher? An American philosopher and a pundit, the modern pundit, and Andrew Cohen, the founder of Enlightened Next, and he was described as a modern guru, both from an American background. But the dialogue that they have together and the article that's been written up as a result of that dialogue has a very interesting explanation of one aspect of God, which is just I, the consciousness of I. And yes, in India, that idea that I am the Brahma, I am the divine, that's prevalent, but that's been integrated now into modern Western thought, number one. And he's described it as the three faces of God, and how that first face of God is what has led to a culture in which it's not just the I of the divine experience, but also, of course, the I of ego manifests in a very strong way in that. And then the second face of God, the personal relationship, and that's the one I'm going to focus on in a minute. And the third face of God, cosmic consciousness, and God in everything. And so this is why I say this is what in India would be described as the omnipresent. I see God in everything. Wherever I look, I see the divine. Which in a way is a very beautiful concept that lifts you away from physical consciousness and mundane consciousness into something that's very unifying in a sense, because you're part of the eternal universe and you're part of that cosmic order. And the problem that people have, it's easy to accept that first one of the greatness of I, and it's easy to accept that third idea of cosmic consciousness, and I know some people who've had an experience of that, being pulled out of the physical consciousness and being part of this encompassing light in a sense. But the second face of God, this aspect of God as a personal being with whom you can have connection and relationship, in the dialogue they say that this is the most difficult one for people to accept currently. Why? Because when you accept God as a being with whom you can have a relationship, what it demands is obedience and renunciation and acceptance and a gentleness of spirit, a recognition of someone higher. And the way they describe it is that It's the only way in which you can bend your knees, and if not both knees, at least one knee. But that idea that it's only through this personal relationship that the ego can break. And people don't want that. They're not interested in obedience. They're not interested in the subject of reverence and a higher being. That whole concept is very contrary to the I, the ego culture of today. And of course, there's many things that you can see in today's world. Like I think it's Andrew Cohen who says that I grew up with the idea where I was told by my parents and everyone else around me, whatever you want to do, whatever you feel is right, go ahead. That is what is right. And so that whole aspect of morality and the understanding of rights and responsibilities, all of that gets thrown away. And we see the repercussions of this in many different areas in the world today. So yes, the danger of throwing God out of the picture and just focusing on the I has definitely generated the situation that we're in today. And the rejection of the Abrahamic concept, I can understand that completely. Why should I want to experience just God's punishment?
Would you say it's more difficult for people to really experience God if they have a religion?
No. In fact, what I found is interesting that out of the Westerners who come to us in London, now it's not a global picture and I'm not giving you specific figures, but certainly if I look around the students in the London class who come from Western background, the majority of them have had a Catholic upbringing, and then some of them Anglican, and maybe a few of them come from a background in which God didn't come into the picture. And so I think it's been quite difficult to change hardcore atheists. And it's happened.
Okay.
There's one particular individual who was born in a Jewish tradition but had lots of challenges with the concepts of being part of the chosen people and the related ideas, and from age 20 rejected the concept of God. And he kept coming here, and after about 8-9 years, said to me one day, Rabbi.
This is Rabbi Janki.
Rabbi Janki, yes. Rabbi Janki was resident here in London for quite a number of years, and it's only in recent times that she's now moved back to India, so we don't have the same access to her today that we did 5 years ago, for example. So this is after Daddy's departure to India, she was just visiting. But he really wanted to meet Daddy, and I knew that Daddy used to tease him and say, one day you're going to tell me you believe in God. And he met with Daddy and he said, Daddy, the day has come. I'll tell you, I now believe in God. And it has happened through an experience he'd had. He'd been practicing meditation with soul consciousness, had become vegetarian. Instantly he heard about these ideas. It started, now some of you might be aware of this and maybe some not, but we recommend that meditation starts very early in the morning at the angelic hour of 4 o'clock, not in the afternoon, 4 a.m. But he accepted that idea and started that already. And so he was practicing many things that laid the foundation that prepared him to be able to come to this experience. And it hasn't happened here in this house, as it happened wherever in his own home, I think. And then he wanted to report that to them. So I've seen a hardcore atheist shift. Mm-hmm. And a few others too. But people who believe in God, and whether they subscribe to religion or they don't in a formal way, maybe they're not a paid up member of a church or a temple in that way, but if there is a tradition that they've been understanding and following, it's actually much easier to come to the depth of understanding of God that Raj Yoga offers.
You talked a lot again about that experience just now with this example, and getting back to your earlier experiences, you said that the sort of the theory of God's existence wasn't usually prominent, certainly earlier in your life, but the experience was what made it real for you. In some ways, does it matter if God really exists or not, if you feel you have an experience with him? I guess the point of my question is that is it slightly a red herring to try and have some sort of conversation about the existence or otherwise of God, but actually is the experience itself a very important thing in its own right, as long as you think, because it seems to me that it comes down to faith, as you alluded to earlier, that you can't necessarily prove the existence of God, but it's down to your own faith and your own experience. So if it's true for you, then it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things if what you really experience is genuinely God or not.
I think a conversation like this opens the door for those who haven't thought about the subject a great deal, because maybe, like myself, I thought, well, I'll come back to it later on in my life, and it doesn't have any relevance for me now, but I realize that it did. And so maybe a conversation like this is a door that opens the path for people to start thinking about these things. And the second is that because I was given very simple, clear information about the identity of the self and the understanding of God, then I was able to have an experience, and that then gave me faith. So I didn't begin with faith, I began with a question. And when I refer to this idea of people having had an experience of an all-encompassing light, that's made them feel that God is all around, everywhere, and you don't have to have a connection in that sense with God. And I'm talking about a few people who've shared this experience with me. I'm not talking in an abstract way. Then what they try to do is to recreate that experience, and it's eluded them. They haven't been able to manage it. And so to me, scientifically, if you cannot replicate, if you cannot duplicate, then how can you understand that experience or help others understand it? So it's a lightning bolt that came from above and disappeared. Mm-hmm. And then, so what? And maybe it just left me with the feeling that, well, there is something up there. But what Raj Yoga is saying, that there's a very simple formula. Understand the formula, practice the formula, and definitely you will be able to come to an experience of the divine. It's not something that may or may not happen by chance. But this is the road. This is the way you follow it, and this is where you can come.
So maybe this is a good opportunity to explore this area a little bit more as well now. We talked a little bit about the concept of God in terms of real or otherwise, but the idea of then developing a closeness with God, how much of that is God God's responsibility? How much of that is your responsibility? How does that engagement happen?
I'll share with you my understanding and see what you make of it. Because we've forgotten who we are and we've lost that connection, God's responsibility is to come and share with us very simple, clear information so that we can find the way back again. And it's up to me to search for that information, because in this age of knowledge and information, everything is available. Even living in China or Egypt or countries that maybe are not as open as others, I know of individuals in these places who have had that feeling that they want to know more, and they've been able to understand and to move forward with spiritual knowledge. So everywhere in the world it's possible now, even in the Pacific Islands or anywhere. So God's responsibility is to give the information, and my responsibility is to seek it out, because I know there's something missing. If I feel there's nothing missing in my life, fine, it's okay. Be happy and be content where you are. And there are people like that. In fact, the vast majority of what's the population of London, 14 million?
Maybe more.
So the vast majority, they're quite content and it's okay, that's fine. But for those who are seeking and wanting to know more and feeling that there's something more to life than just working and eating and drinking and sleeping, they're the people who will be seeking that information, and for sure they'll find it. But having found that information, it's important to practice the ideas, having understood them, and then to follow a certain code of discipline that's able to nurture and sustain the spiritual experience. So it needs knowledge, it needs practice, and it needs a discipline. It needs all of these things. And yes, then that experience is available for each one. And that's my responsibility then, to follow those other three things.
So you talked about that first step, then, knowledge, and that, you know, you need to find this information and digest it and really make it real for you. So maybe could you expand a little bit about what do you mean by this particular knowledge? What is it in terms of that information that will make that connection easier?
My favorite subject is the soul, because when I understood the knowledge of the soul, it answered all my questions, but it also opened doors to things that I hadn't even thought about. And so understanding who I am and really coming to that experience of I, the spiritual being, and a separate entity from this body of mine. In India they use this word soul a lot, Atma. It's part of the language, but I don't know how many people actually have experimented with the awareness of soul. And here, when we share the basic ideas of meditation, you first take up just this awareness of soul and body working together, the human being, the being and this human form. And in this awareness of just that experience of the being that I am, it changes the whole perspective of life completely. Because I, as a soul,
story of the goodness that there is inherent, intrinsic within the soul, the peace that is there, the happiness, the joy, the truth that's there within. It changes things completely, dramatically. And so, first that awareness, and then the detail of what's going on in the soul. Why is it that I'm not peaceful? What is it that's made me move away from truth and joy, even though it's there within me? So understanding what's going on inside the soul, how does the mind work? But why is it that at times my conscience is speaking and yet I'm not following through what my conscience tells me? Or even the state where I've done something and it's only much later that I realize that that wasn't right. And so what happened to my conscience at that time? What influences were working that made it go to sleep? So these ideas, which anyway could be considered philosophical ideas, but they're actually very much connected with our life and what's going on in our life now. So understanding that whole awareness of the soul, because I didn't come to Raj Yoga with the question of I want to experience God. I came to Raj Yoga with curiosity, but I want to understand more about what's going on within myself. And so understanding these ideas of how thoughts and feelings and conscience and personality all work together or don't work together, how things become dysfunctional within the inner being, within the self, it opened up many, many different ideas for me to explore and to experiment with. But the beautiful thing was it all fitted. It all made a lot of sense. And so then this awareness that I'm the soul, and it's very interesting how I can explain it, I can feel it, and yet from moment to moment to keep that awareness is something that's very tricky, it's very slippery, it slips away within a moment. One moment I can be soul conscious and see you and you and you as a soul, and next moment again have it and you're back here. And so it takes a lot of practice, a lot of attention. It's not hard work, but it takes that, not just even attention, it takes a very deep motivation that I want to maintain my spiritual awareness. You know, there's an expression that puts it quite clearly as two different stages. One's a stage where I think I'm a human being going on a spiritual journey to find myself. And the other is where I know I'm a spiritual being and I'm on a human journey having this experience. And so thinking of myself as this and then trying to be spiritual, it's very hard work. But the reality is that I don't start as a human being. I started as a soul. And so I, the soul, the spiritual being, came on a human journey. And so to keep my consciousness on that level of I, the spiritual being, that's what the whole game is about. And in that awareness of the spiritual being, then yes, the connection with God is a very simple and easy one. And in the human experience, I'm struggling, whichever tradition I belong to, it's a struggle to go up to find God and reach God, and maybe my prayers reach God, maybe they don't, I don't know. And in the ancient times, you know, they thought that if thunderstorms came, that was God being angry with them, and that their prayers weren't reaching God, and so you scramble around and do a few sacrifices. So all of these ideas have been very mixed, and Raj Yoga very easy. Come to the awareness of who you are, and then you can connect in a very simple way with the power of your thoughts. Don't need to do anything on an external physical level. Can sit comfortably in a chair. Don't have to sit on the floor or stand on your head or anything like that. Through the years, different people have attempted different things to try and conquer the body and come to God through that. And you don't need to do that. You don't need to conquer the body. But what you do need to do is to detach. Separate the awareness away from the ego of this and come to that.
Is there a practice that you think we could try in terms of that takes us through this process a little bit? Is that the game that you want? Would you like to hear it again?
I'm going to add to what I've been sharing earlier, and I'll again speak out my own thoughts as we meditate, but I'm going to ask you to focus on this point of light that's in front of you. And it means you have to keep your eyes open, which is different to what most people feel as meditation. You tell people prayer, meditation, and they think that the first step is to close the eyes. But from the things you've heard so far, you can see that hopefully meditation comes in a very natural way, so that you're walking down the road, you're speaking to somebody, you're doing the things you need to do in life, but yet you're able to keep a higher consciousness and keep an inner connection with the divine. And so keeping your eyes open is absolutely vital to be able to have this higher consciousness as you do all the other things. And so focusing on that light will be helpful, and it'll be easier for you to keep your eyes open. Focus my thoughts on the being within, the being of light, shining in the center of the forehead. As I go deeper and deeper within, coming to the awareness of my own inner treasures, coming to the quietness and stillness within. My thoughts move towards the spring, the being of light, the divine. As I focus on this point of light, drawn into a space of eternity, a place of light, that there are no boundaries, no walls. I stay connected with the source of light. And the power of God's light purifies my thoughts, my feelings, and even my personality. Light is the power of love. And the power of love heals the soul. Removing the sorrow and the pain that I have been carrying. And God's love awakens hope that I know that the future is a beautiful one filled with God's light and love. Filled with the power of God's love, purified and healed with God's love. My thoughts returned world, and now with an awareness of God's presence and God's love. Bring in another idea. It's something you alluded to early on. You spoke about how people don't see God doing anything for the world. And one was the fact that God gives us knowledge and information about ourselves and God. But the other thing that was incredibly helpful for me was to understand that it wasn't God who created the mess of the world that we find ourselves in today. And so it's very easy to say to God, but you know, why did you make such a mess of the world, and how come there's so much suffering? But in fact, I understand now that we've been responsible for creating the mess that exists today. Our ego, our greed, our anger, and we see the results. And so that's not God's responsibility. It's not God's fault. But today, if I turn to God, and if I take God's love and light and power, then I find a way to be able to sort out the chaos and mess. And in fact, first it's the chaos in here that gets sorted out, and the knowledge that God shares helps me understand what's going on. And the power and love God gives through meditation resolves things so that there's harmony in here. And that then enables me to start creating harmony here with others around me. And that then helps me understand how to have harmony in terms of things that we do in the world out there. And so the world that God had created, it was a world of perfect harmony. And it's something that all the traditions remind us of. A world of paradise, a world of utopia, a world of heaven, dream time, call it what you will, a golden age. But having created that world and human beings in that world, somehow we slipped along the way and we moved out of that divine state of grace into the state of negativity that human beings find themselves in now. And as we came into the state of negativity, we did all the things that we see are happening around us now. And so God didn't do this, we did this. But also, God doesn't wave a magic wand and say, okay, I'll deal with all the problems of the world. But God teaches us how to change ourselves and then change the world around us through our own actions. And once I understood this, it was a very big shift in my awareness. And so either you reject the concept of God and say nothing that God does, nothing that he can do, or in a state of devotion to God, you say, but why isn't God doing something about all this? And you attack God on both fronts, the state of the world, as well as the problems in our own lives. Why are my relationships not working out? Why am I not having the success I would like to have? Why? And there's blame imposed on God. And poor God, he's not responsible, it's us. But then God, again, out of love and compassion and mercy, says, okay, even if you blamed me, even if you've forgotten me, never mind, I'll show you what you can do to sort things out.
It seems like a very different version of God that I'm sure many people may have grappled with. And it seems to be much more, this may just be my interpretation, a much more, not a passive God, but the traditional concept of God being almighty and all powerful. It seems to have a very different meaning in this concept compared to the way it was maybe traditionally understood that long.
Very different, but in fact the might of God is to be able to do things that nobody else can do. And so I don't mean resuscitation or, you know, giving an injection on a physical level or things like this, but to change the quality of the human mind and the way the mind works, to give new insights and realizations that we'd totally forgotten, and then to give us the power to be able to follow that insight through into our life. Because it's great to have realizations, but sometimes realizations are in theory and they're very far from our own life of action. And so that gap is removed when there's power received from God. So the Almighty is able to give me personally the might with which to follow through realizations in my life. And this is where this idea of connection comes in. So just as our minds are now connected on the same subject, if you were thinking about work or you were thinking about football, we wouldn't be connected. But our minds are working together on the same level now. In the same way, when my thoughts connect with God, that connection is the one through which I'm able to receive all the power, all the love that God wants to give me. And that energy is able to flow. And the transformation of human beings is the greatest of all miracles. I have a question for you. Who's tried to change a habit? We're coming to the end of the year and we'll be making resolutions maybe. And just a few people put up their hands, but I'm sure somewhere at some point in your life you must have thought, I really have to sort this out, I really have to change this. And you don't have to answer me. How often is it that you've tried to change a habit and it doesn't quite work, and you have to try again, and you have to try again? So why I'm saying this is because it takes a lot of inner power to change even one little habit. And so to transform the very deep-seated tendencies that we have for ego and anger, etc., it's only God's power that's able to help us change and transform and to allow all other influences to finish and the true beauty of the human spirit again to emerge. But that's God's work. Work that no human being can do and no prophet has been able to do up until now. The history of humanity is that we've been coming down and down and down, and we've come to a point where we've lost our power, we've lost our values, we've lost our strength. And so now this is the work that only God can do and is doing right now.
Just on that particular point, the work that we need to do for connecting with God or building that closeness with God, you talked about the importance of the type of thoughts we have to make that a genuine connection, and the importance of, you know, the example of the conversation we're having. Do you have any conversations with God as well? Because so far we talked much about the types of experience you can draw from God, but in terms of your thoughts, does a conversation come into that process?
Absolutely.
Could you explain what that conversation is?
The being of light is, this is a very physical image that's being shown here, but in that awareness of soul and connecting with God, the Supreme Being, it's just simply a very pure connection in which everything can flow from the divine to the soul. But in coming to that connection and building up that connection, it's very useful to experiment with different relationships with God. This being doesn't have a form which is male or female, but actually the soul also doesn't have male or female form. It's the body that has gender. And yet, in the relationship with God, it's possible to think of God as the Supreme Mother. and have a conversation with your mother, but not the human mother with all the defects and weaknesses, but the perfect supreme mother, the one who's always there to give love, unconditional love, absolutely non-judgmental love, and accepts you even though you rejected God. Experiment with a dialogue with the Supreme Father, because mother is the first experience that love that's able to just embrace you and carry you. But then the Father, who's able to give you an inheritance, the property of happiness, the property of joy. The teacher, who's constantly sharing wisdom, and it's a process of lifelong learning. Literally, you just continue to learn more and more and more. It doesn't stop, and so it keeps you young. It keeps the cells very active. The guide, the friend, the beloved. So having a conversation with God on the basis of these very human terms, but the supreme within all of these relationships, and you have a very beautiful experience of what comes from that connection. But each one of these relationships carries a right but a responsibility. And so I have a responsibility to be obedient to my mother and father. I have a responsibility to be honest in terms of my study of what the teacher is teaching me. I have a responsibility to understand deeply what the guide is signaling me, and then to follow those directions. And if I'm fulfilling my responsibility in life, not just in an abstract way of my thoughts, then yes, I'm blind to be obedient to God. But in a very real way, in practical life, then the connection is becoming stronger and stronger. Just as with a friend, if you're loyal to your friend, the relationship is cemented. And if you say you're loyal, but really you're not, then the relationship begins to fray. Same thing, obedience to my parents, understanding what my teacher is saying, and studying and applying that truth in my life. So through my life, through my actions, the connection becomes a very strong, deep one, in which I know that I can draw on God's help. I don't even need to call God, but God is going to be available for me to take that help and to use that in my life. And life is then filled with God's protection, God's love, God's blessings, a life of grace. And it's available for everyone, not just for a select few.
If it's not too personal a question, can I ask what is the best conversation or the most important conversation you've ever had with God?
It was a conversation that changed my life, in that I understood that if I wanted to help anyone and help them be free from suffering, I first had to resolve everything within myself. And suffering is connected with ego and anger and attachment and all these things. So in that conversation, I understood that I had to remove the negativity from myself, and then I could be an instrument to be able to show others how to do the same, and through that experience freedom. And that conversation changed my life.
How can you be sure that it is God who's talking to you and not your own imagination?
Because I could never have imagined this thing. Nobody had ever told me that it was possible. So it wasn't that it was a conversation that was lurking in the back of my mind. I understood completely that this was information which didn't come from my own mind, but it came from above, and it made a lot of sense. It doesn't make sense to you. And so, and I hadn't heard the slogan, in fact it wasn't a slogan that had been coined at that time, and the slogan came decades later, but this conversation was in 1968, and now I understand the slogan, in order to change the world, change yourself. Self-transformation leads to world transformation. But the slogan came much, much later.
So maybe for those of us who often tonight want to go away and try and practice having our own conversations with God, do you have any tips in terms of when you're going through this internal process, what to listen out for and how you can pick up that energy or this connection that we can explore maybe in a more deeper way?
Let's do this re-experiment again. So shall we do that? I spoke it right here. Aware of the self. I saw radiant light. I shine. And my thoughts connect to the Supreme. And I find myself surrounded by pure love, the love of the Supreme Mother. A love that comforts me. And I realize that I have moved so far away from my mother and had forgotten my mother. And my mother never forgot me. And the pure love of God, my mother, has been waiting for me. And this is the love that I have been thirsting for. This is the love that offers me hope. This is the love that accepts me completely. As I am, whatever I am. And my mother gently leads me to my father. God can see. With love. And reminds me. It is property. Yoga is calm yoga, and that has a couple of interpretations. One is to be able to connect and have that experience of yoga whilst engaged in karma, but the other is to allow that yoga, that experience of God's love and truth, to be revealed through my actions. And then thirdly, it also means that my actions should be such that my connection with God is strengthened, and so my actions of truth and love will reinforce that connection. And if it's actions that are contrary to that, then that relationship will diminish, in the sense that I won't be able to feel that presence of the divine in my life. And so, when I understood all of these things, it was a very beautiful explanation of what was going on inside of me, less than an explanation of what was happening in the world around me, but also a very clear guideline as to what it is I needed to do to help myself and the world.
Just to connect with that final point you talked about, patterns, it just reminded me of something I know a number of people often say, which is that they don't think themselves worthy of being able to connect to God. Quite often because they feel guilty about who they are, what they've done, and so on. In those sorts of circumstances, what would you say to people like that who say that they don't feel that they are worthy of going to God and having a conversation with God because of what they've done?
God is the merciful mother, the compassionate mother, and so whatever it is I've done, it's okay. Think about the child who's been playing and become dirty and muddy, and he runs home and the mother just picks up the child and gives him a hug and then starts to clean him. And so the mother doesn't see that the child is dirty and her clothes are going to get dirty. She just embraces him. And God, the mother, does the same. Whatever I've done, if today I say, I love you, God's ready to embrace me. And the embrace of God's love is also the process of cleansing and purification. And so I don't know that there's anyone who hasn't made mistakes in their life. I think we're all in the same boat, greater or lesser degrees maybe. And so each one is able to come to God and experience the mother's love, and the mother's love is the preparation to then experience a state of self-worth and stand in one's own dignity and claim the happiness that the father offers.
Thank you, Sister Jensi. I'm just conscious of time, and Sister Jensi, would you be able to open up the questions now? Would you be available for a few minutes afterwards if anyone has a burning question, if they wanted to see you? So on that ending, I'd just like to thank Sister Jensi for very interesting insights that you shared with us in your experiences. I'd really like to thank you this evening.